Okay, I'm going to go from bones to genes. And for those of you who feel a little bit intimidated by the subject, I'm going to take it slow and save up your questions. I'm talking about population genetics and a subject called phylogenetics. Those are big words, but I think by the time we get to the end of the talk, you'll be comfortable. Here's my punchline. Similarity of organization or form, whether it be at the level of genes or chromosomes, proteins or fossils, does not mean necessarily that they share a common evolutionary history. And I'm going to show you some experimental evidence to demonstrate it in just a little while. So here's where I test the evolutionary mechanism. We're going to do it in two stages. One is what it would take to get from a chimp-like ancestor to a human. You're going to see some pictures you've already seen. Here's a chimp and a human side by side. But nobody thinks that we came from a chimp. Rather, what they say is there was an ancestor something like 6 million years ago. Actually, now they say anywhere from 6 to 14 million years because estimates for mutation rate have changed. But I'm going to stick to 6 million because that's what all the rest of my numbers are based on. Then along came Lucy, which Casey just talked about. Then along came Homo erectus, also called Turkana boy, and that was 2 million years ago. Then along came Homo sapiens sapiens, us. Chimps, meanwhile, went on to do their own thing. We don't actually have fossil intermediates for chimps. That's the story. Here, you've seen this before, Turkana boy and Lucy. Turkana boy looks like us, except above the neck. He's got a smaller skull. Lucy is much smaller. Her skeleton, looks like she's walking upright, but we have reasons to think that's not the case. Here's why. On the left top, you have a human male skeleton seen front and back. On the left right, you see a skeleton of Turkana boy. What do you notice? Is there any difference? How much difference? Not much. The pelvis is the same, the leg bones are the same, the arms are the same, the rib cage is the same. The only difference is a little bit in the skull. And the feet are the same, the hands are the same. Over here we have a chimp skeleton, front and back. Notice the pelvis is different here, the set of the legs is different, the hands and the arms are different from humans. And over here we have Lucy. Who does she look like? Does she look like us or like a chimp? Well, I would say she's chimp-like based on her arms and her legs, her rib cage, her shoulders, her short neck. Her pelvis is intermediate between ours and the chimp's. That's probably the only reason for thinking she ever walked upright. Her feet were also intermediate between us and chimps. Now, how many mutations do you think it would take to go from a chimp-like ancestor, Australopithecus, to us? Anybody care to hazard a guess? Maybe hundreds, maybe thousands. Coordinated mutations. I showed you why you have to have all the traits working together. It's a network of changes. That's why I have this slide up here. Now, how long would it take to get a network of changes? This is where the population genetics comes in. Does the population genetics model work? It's actually a matter of some math. And these are the variables that are involved. All you need to know is what the mutation rate per individual per generation is. And you need to know the population size, so you know how many individuals you're talking about. You need to know how long each generation lasts and how many mutations you're talking about. Once you have these numbers, you can compute how long it would take. And here are the numbers. Estimated size of our ancestral population from the literature. Now, that's not my estimate, is 10,000. Mutation rate is 1 in 10 to the 8 per nucleotide per generation. And this is actually a generous estimate. Then a generation time of 10 years, this is actually generous because our generation time is more like 20 years. And then how long would it take to get one mutation in a DNA binding site? Why a DNA binding site? Because the idea is, you change a DNA binding site next to a gene, you change the gene's expression. All right? So, a couple of mathematicians named Durbin and Schmidt did this calculation. 6 million years to get one mutation in a DNA binding site. That's how long we have to go from a chimp-like ancestor to us. That's just one mutation. Now, granted, you could say, well, you've got 20,000 genes evolving independently. You can get 20,000 independent mutations. But remember, I said they're not supposed to be independent mutations. They have to be coordinated mutations. And I would also point out that mutation is blind, and they don't store up the good ones and get rid of the bad ones. You can have a couple of really good mutations on a couple of genes and then have another bad one come along and sit right down in the middle and wipe out any progress you've made. So it's not like you can bank the good stuff. If you have to wait for two mutations in the same DNA binding site, that means you have to wait 216 million years. That goes back to the appearance of the first mammals, according to paleontology. Now, I don't know about you, but this seems to me a very strong demonstration that there isn't enough time to accomplish what needs to be accomplished. But I'm not going to leave it there. We do research on bacterial proteins, and that what you see there are two different bacterial proteins from E. coli. They're actually very similar in structure. Would you agree? They look an awful lot alike. In sequence, they're different, but in structure, they're very similar, and they have different functions in the cell. So we set out to ask the question, how hard would it be to get this one to perform the function of this one? How many mutations would it take? And the answer came back, 1 in 10 to the 21 years. Okay? 1 in 10 to the 21 years. So that's 1 with 21 zeros after it. How old is the universe? 10 to the 14 years. So it's more time than we have. And we went on to test it in other members of the same family. Here's some other proteins we tested it. None of these were able to be converted with a single mutation, and some of them couldn't be converted with two. And that's the boundary for what can be required. So similarity of sequence or structure or form doesn't mean there's an evolutionary path between two things. I'm saying the same thing I said at the beginning. We've demonstrated it here with bacterial proteins. We've demonstrated it with population genetics. And that's why I think that the argument from similarity that is the underlying argument for everyone who says evolution is a proven fact is wrong. There's just too much to do and not enough time.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2014. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.